Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Well, good evening. Happy non-birthing Parents' Day. No, seriously, happy Father's Day. And welcome to the John Whitmer Show, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Very happy you joined us here this evening here at your local resistance headquarters, where we proudly welcome fellow MAGA extremists and we champion the conservative principles of limited government, individual liberty, free enterprise, and traditional values. If you'd like to call in, our studio lines are open. You can reach me at 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and Truth Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out. Would love to hear from you. A couple of quick programming notes. First off, Wednesday, the 19th, I'll be filling in again on KCMO up in Kansas City from 10 to noon. So if you want to download their app, or if you happen to be in the Kansas City market, tune in. And want to let you know, we have an incredible list of special guests coming up on the John Whitmer Show. Last night, my buddy Andy Hoosier and I had the pleasure of sitting down with Congressman Jim Jordan. We recorded a joint interview with Congressman Jim Jordan, and I will play that for you next Sunday. In addition, in the next couple weeks, we're going to be joined by Turning Points USA founder Charlie Kirk and the incredible Tucker Carlson. So we have some great guests. I cannot tell you how thrilled I am to have Charlie Kirk and Tucker Carlson on the show. So stay tuned. Make sure you like and follow me on X and follow the KNSS and John Whitmer Show Facebook pages for details so you don't want to miss Charlie Kirk, Jim Jordan, and Tucker Carlson coming up here in the next couple weeks. We're going to have a blast. We have a great show planned for you tonight, though. Coming up, just some great guests. The former assistant director for economic policy at the White House's Office of Management and Budget under President Trump and former governor, Dr. Jeff Collier, will join us. And we're going to have a discussion on the Chiefs Royals Starbonds proposal. We're going to talk to both of them. Dr. Collier's in favor of the plan, and Vance Ginn, who was at the Office of Management and Budget, is opposed. We'll talk to both of them and really hash out the Starbonds proposal. Riley Gaines Center Ambassador Caitlin Wheeler, she was on Riley's team at the University of Kentucky. She will tell us why she and a number of other female athletes are suing the NCAA for violating their Title IX rights. We'll continue our 2024 election candidate profiles with a conversation with Greg Ferris, who is a candidate for Sedgwick County Commission District 3. And Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute is going to explain why he says anyone who tells you that the USD 259 Wichita Public Schools bond proposal will not raise property taxes is misleading you. And they are, by the way. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. As I'm sure you've seen through social media, through the bizarre changes to logos, through flags and whatnot, June is the start of many things. It's start of campaign season for some. It's the beginning of summer for others. But for many on the progressive left, it has become Pride Month and tied to the alphabet mafia, the LGBTQ movement. Pride, quote-unquote, events started a few decades ago as an activist effort to push back against the stigma attached to homosexuality. And I've said many times before, I don't care if you choose that lifestyle. I could care less. If you want to be gay, be gay. I really don't care. It's a private choice. It's your private life. Knock yourself out. But it is now extended across the whole month of June, and it looks more like an effort designated to indoctrinate than celebrate. And frankly, I don't know why we're celebrating your sexuality. I mean, it's a choice. Why do we need to celebrate it? But that's fine. Whatever. But it's gone too far, in my opinion. Last weekend, social media abounded with videos of pride events with naked men on bikes, in parades, dressed in bondage attire. In one case, a gay bar in Dallas where they held a Drag the Kids to Pride event. Young children were seen handing money to twerking drag queens. A bright pink neon sign said, "It's not going to lick itself," adding an extra layer of creepiness to the whole thing. Recently, the X account Libs of TikTok alerted followers to a drag show at a San Francisco middle school. And in one video, a crowd of students cheers wildly as the performer gyrates in a way that is not appropriate, trust me, for middle schoolers. And visceral outrage at sexualizing young kids is, frankly, the right response. Look, you can be prideful. Even though pride is a sin, but you could, have pride. I get that. But is this appropriate for young kids? And there's plenty of outrage online, but the spectacle of drag queens performing for kids and their parents has been common at these pride parades and naked men floundering their parts. This has been going on for almost two decades, and it's just not appropriate. And there was little public outcry beyond conservative circles, and that's the problem here. The sexualization of young kids seems to have moved from the fringe to the mainstream. It's not just a random gay bar in San Francisco. It now seems to be the official policy. For instance, as the Daily Signal reports, the Smithsonian American Art Museum has gotten in on the action as part of its Pride Family Day. The taxpayer-supported museum sponsored, quote, what it called an age-appropriate drag queen show and crafts inspired by the LGBTQ+ pride flag for children ages 3 and up. Set aside the fact that, is this really appropriate for 3-year-olds? Why is it appropriate for taxpayer-funded? That's fine. You can find age-appropriate drag queens, maybe at, 18, 21, but talk about listing in a dictionary of oxymorons. I mean, that's just not appropriate. Pride now seems less about gay and lesbian inclusion and more about abolishing the difference between males and females and between adults and children. And you can detect this shift even in presidential announcements. In 1998 and 99, President Clinton declared June to be Gay and Lesbian Pride Month. President Barack Obama did the same every year he was in office. He eventually added the T. LGBT now rolls, smoothly off the tongue. We're common to it. They keep adding letters, however. Joe Biden recently added yet another plus. He added the plus and the Q, apparently including gender identity and whatever the plus is, and apparently drag queen burlesque shows for 5-year-olds. I don't know. But why is this appropriate? And why is it necessary? The targeting of children gives this rainbow sea a much more sinister hue. The pride signaling on corporate logos is pandering, and it's just not necessary. TV networks and streaming services, Google ads, and even on Major League Baseball fields and jerseys feels even more unnecessary and, frankly, oppressive. The annual festival of naked men and naked political pandering has gotten out of hand. But to make matters even worse, they're targeting our kids. This Pride Month, Kellogg's released its Together with Pride cereal for kids. It features a tear-out together band that children can use to share their pronouns. Is that appropriate? Likewise, the popular children's cartoon Blue's Clues aired an episode featuring a song that celebrates LGBT plus identities, sung by a cartoon drag queen. The song praises families with gay, lesbian, transgender, and non-binary members. Which, again, you want to do that, that's fine, but we're targeting kids. And these are just a few examples of products aimed at exposing children to sexual content. There are also the Care Bears phone cases, the Teletubbies Pride Collection, Disney's Rainbow Gear, Lego's Pride Collection, and gay Captain America. There's nothing to be proud of in any of that. It's not that I don't like rainbows. What I don't care for is that the alphabet mafia has turned them into. What color is pride? Well, frankly, it should be red, white, and blue. The red, white, and blue color scheme embodies the values of equality, liberty, diversity that are central to any pride. It aligns with the inclusive spirit of Pride Month, emphasizing that all rights are human rights, that all of us were created equal, universally cherished in democracies and enjoyed by, wait for it, everyone. The pride flag is not inclusive. The American flag is. Showing pride in the red, white, and blue can foster a sense of national pride and solidarity among all individuals, reinforcing the message that diversity strengthens our society, as opposed to pointing out our separateness. It acknowledges the ongoing struggle for equality while celebrating the progress we've made over the years. So this month, I encourage you to embrace my colors, my pride colors, which are red, white, and blue, with broad stripes and white stars. And it stands for all of us. So a potential $450 million bond issue, which the Wichita School District's facilities master plan, wouldn't come with a tax increase, at least according to the superintendent, Kelly Bielefeld. Superintendent. He emphasized Monday night at the district discussed the first phase of the master plan with the school board, saying it wouldn't have no new taxes, nothing to see here, folks. But is that really the case? How can the district raise $450 million without any new taxes? Well, with us now to explain whether or not there is any truth to that claim is Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Dave, thank you for joining us. Happy Father's Day, my friend.
Thank you, John. Same to you.
All right, Dave. So, while the statement, I looked into this, and while the statement that a $450 million bond issue wouldn't raise taxes is sort of technically true, the only way they can say that is because the current bond, as I understand it, expires in less than 5 years, which, if that happens, everyone who owns property in Wichita in the school district would see their property taxes go down. So therefore, it wouldn't be a new tax. They'd just be extending the current tax 16 years, basically, correct?
Yeah, John, you know, I think when people say you can spend $450 million and it won't cost you anything,
yeah,
they maybe haven't spent enough time reading Milton Friedman,
right,
who famously said there is no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, that's like
you're
the
right
wife that says, yeah, I bought a new pair of shoes and, you know, it was 50% off and it only cost me $100. I saved $100.
Okay, well, I know it's Father's Day, but let's be honest. And some guys do that too with fishing rods
okay,
and guns
that's true
and
so, golf clubs. That's true. Yes.
But yeah, so what would happen, John? You're right. The, the district charges 7.7 mils of property tax for its debt service. So that goes away if there's no new debt taken on, and that would amount to a 15% reduction in your school property tax.
15%. Okay. So literally, we're talking about for the next after 2028, everyone's getting 15% cut in their property taxes, or for 16 years after that, you're paying the same property tax. So it is technically, I mean, I'm sorry, but no matter how you spin it, that's a property tax increase for 16 years.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you promise pay this and we'll do that, we didn't agree. The voters didn't say, I'm voting to forever pay this,
right,
and assuming you'll come up with more debt. No, it was specific to this. So obviously there is a cost to it. And I just wish school districts would be honest about that. I mean, most people understand there's no such thing as a free lunch. And so you're asking me to give you authorization for $450 million and insulting me at the same time.
Right.
I mean, come on. Just be honest. And you know, it's the situation the district faces itself in is it's not the creation of the current superintendent and the current board.
No.
This didn't just happen overnight. So let's just start. This is a perfect opportunity to say, just be honest. And I think they do owe it to the community to lay it all out. Look, there were a lot of mistakes made over the last 15, 20, whatever years. You know, how did we get here? What happened before? What were the big things, decisions they made? They've got capacity for over 60,000 students. The district was never on that trajectory.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just, which brings into question the validity of the proposal to do this bond issue. But they really just need to lay out what was done, what should have been done, and now what do you have in place to make sure it won't happen again?
Well, I'm sure nothing, because they want their money. I mean,
okay, but you know, if you want the money, you're going to have to start showing that you're going to be responsible with what you have right now. I mean, just look at, as you said, there's never enough. Since 2005, the district has lost 2% of its enrollment. But classroom teachers have gone up 5%. We have 43% more managers and 29% more people who are not teachers, aside from managers. Why was that allowed to happen? How much of this was, I mean, everybody needs to understand it. It's not pointing fingers. We should take the position that, okay, no one's to blame for what took place. But everybody's responsible for moving ahead. We've got to figure this out. You just can't keep coming back every so often and say, well, we need another $500 million because somebody didn't do this.
Right.
I mean, just looking at the managers, for goodness sakes, if the district was staffed at the same proportion of students to manager as it was in 2005, they'd be spending $12 to $15 million less just on those managers.
Well, and that fills right there.
122 less.
That right there fills their budget hole that they've got right now with the cuts that they've already made. We're talking with Dave Traubert from the Kansas Policy Institute. Dave, I did some research on kansasopengov.org, which takes the data directly from the Department of Education. And you mentioned that last bond that was passed in 2008. But if you look at USD 259 spending over the last 20 years, the district has seen an 89% increase in expenses on instruction. And that's, you know, I mean, if you're going to spend it in the classroom at least. But over that same period of time, since 2005, the district has seen a 68% increase in spending on, you highlighted it, administration, a 103% increase in spending on operations and maintenance. The glaring one is a 308% increase in capital spending. Yet they want another property tax increase for more capital spending. I mean, it just seems like it's counterintuitive. And again, they're lying, or, well, misleading the public, I'll be generous, about what they're going to do with the money and whether or not it's going to be a tax increase. And on top of that, Dave, they're sitting on $284 million in carryover cash.
They are. Now, some of that is legally set aside to pay off debt. And some of it is in federal funds that can't be used for other things. But there's a column on that report on KansasOpenGov that looks at operating funds.
Right.
Their operating cash has increased $102 million since 2005. That's mostly money they were given to educate kids and didn't spend.
Right. So
there,
I mean, it's right there.
Everywhere you look in the past, in the past, I'm not going to lay any blame on the people who were there now, but in the past, there have been a lot of mistakes made. And all that giant increase in instruction spending, it didn't produce anything.
Achievement
has gone down. That we don't have the 24 results yet, but the 23 results showed over half the kids in the district are below grade level in reading and math. You look at the high school kids, 9% were proficient in math, just 14% in reading. It's not just to spend the money, it's to spend the money properly to get results.
The right way. And that's the key. And again, if they made the case, and that's what I want, if you feel that this is necessary and you feel you need, then make the case openly, transparently, explain, yes, it's going to be technically a tax increase because it's going away. You should get a 15%. And right now, I know of seniors that are losing their homes because they can't stay in them any longer. And, you know, make that case, prove that you need it, show how you're going to spend it, and then let the voters vote, but be honest with them. Dave, I'm up on my bottom of the hour break, but I want to thank you again. If the two sites that people can go if they want information, KansasOpenGov.org, and as always, they can find you guys at KansasPolicy.org, correct?
That's right.
Dave, I appreciate you as always. You're always good with the stats and always reliable with the numbers, and most importantly, they're factual and they're accurate. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, John. Happy Father's Day.
Likewise.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Every election cycle, we try to bring you as many candidates running for local, state, and federal offices as we can. We're going to try and bring you as many as we can between now and the primary and between now and the general. That anytime you want somebody on, let me know. We'll do our best to reach out to them, including the Democrats, just so you know. All that being said, joining us now is Greg Ferris. He is a candidate for Sedgwick County Commission District 3. The owner of Ferris Consulting. He's a lifelong resident of Wichita and a graduate of Wichita State University. Mr. Ferris served for 12 years on the Wichita City Council, and after his term expired, he started a consulting firm in 1999. For 25 years, Greg has helped national, regional, and local companies and individuals resolve issues before local and state governmental agencies. Greg, thank you for joining us. Happy Father's Day. It's nice to have you on the show.
John, always good to be around you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You might pull that a little closer so we can. There you go. Perfect. Let me get started with this. I've seen the family photos. I know you got kids. You've had a good career both in public service and in the private sector. Why subject yourself to another? I mean, why? You don't need the money probably. So why bother to go back into this?
John, I appreciate that question because I think it's very important. I spent 12 years on the Wichita City Council, enjoyed it immensely, enjoyed getting off of it. 12 years was a long time. That's why I can't foresee being in county office that long, just because it's just too long. But I was effective. I did a lot of things. If you go back and you look at what was accomplished in this community from 1987 to 1999, just little small projects like five Kellogg flyovers, including the downtown flyovers, K-96 bypass, Old Town. Those were all things that were done while I was on the city council and was very instrumental in a lot of those things getting done, particularly out west, moving up the Maze project. So I think I have a lot to offer. Once I got out and started working on the other side of the fence and started helping businesses navigate, I learned just how much bureaucracy there is, how hard it is to deal with government, and it shouldn't be. So I'm now hoping that because I have both sides, that I can now move into that and say, you know what, we can make government better. We can maybe make it easier for businesses to do business in our community.
You know, I serve in the legislature. A lot of people hear the word lobbyist. They think it's a dirty word. And what do you say to those who are concerned about the fact that you've been a lobbyist and, you know, and are maybe worried about those relationships in your past?
Two things. Again, that's a great question. I really never was that much of a lobbyist. Didn't do much in Topeka. Didn't do much lobbying per se. I felt more I was just assisting businesses navigate their way through. I wasn't trying to get legislation passed on the local level, those kind of things. I was just maybe helping them through the bureaucracy. But you know what? I was effective for those guys. I worked hard and I was effective. But they were my clients. My clients now will be the citizens of West Sedgwick County. And I will intend to be as effective for them. Knowing now how businesses operate, what they need, when they come before me, they won't be able to fool me, because I was there. So I can now work for my citizens at the same level and degree that I worked for, my clients.
Well, and let me talk, because I looked at your website, gave three main focuses that you highlighted. One in particular is citizen-focused initiatives. And I'm assuming that's what do you mean by citizen-focused initiatives?
Well, thing I want to do is continue the district advisory board and make sure that that county advisory board that they have still has the opportunity for citizens to be there. The other thing that I think is important is that I'm going to be there full-time, so that if citizens need access to find out what they need, what they want, how those things. So I can then hear, so instead of it being, you know, Greg Ferris led, District 3, it will be Greg Ferris working with the citizens to lead District 3.
So you're stepping away from your business then?
Absolutely. I stood before the Planning Commission, back in, November and said, listen, you know, I appreciated being here. You've seen me a lot. Probably glad I'm gone, but I won't be coming back anymore. So I haven't done that since November. They thought I was dying or something. You know, they now know why I was running. But
the second plank is reduced property tax growth. And each year after appraised values are set, you know, mill rates should be reduced so that the new valuations deliver the same dollar amount of property tax as budgeted the year before, hence the name revenue neutral. And I put that in there to make sure listeners understand what revenue neutral is, because it's a difficult concept, I think. However, the Sedgwick County Commission has not done that. Since 2022, only 32% of Sedgwick County residents have not seen an increase in their property taxes due to these revenue neutral rates. In fact, 23% of residents have seen their taxes go up by at least 5%, and over 34% of residents have seen their property taxes rise by over 10%. On your website, you talk about reducing property taxes, keeping property taxes low. Will you commit to not raising property taxes by pledging to reduce the mill levy so that after appraised values are set, you will vote to lower the mill rate so that you will keep them revenue neutral?
One of the beauties, John, is that I have a record, and you can go back and look from 1987 to 1999. During that period, the increase in spending of Wichita General Fund was less than the rate of inflation.
That's what it should be, always keeping that at 4% or 3%, whatever. Yeah.
And so I have two things about property taxes. What you said is very, very important, but it goes beyond that because that only impacts Sedgwick County.
Right.
And Sedgwick County is the smallest piece of the tax burden. You have the schools, which are the biggest piece, and you have the cities, which are, unless you happen to live in the rural area, most people live in a city and are paying city taxes. So what I think needs to happen is that we need to go to the legislature and have them reevaluate how they assess property so that property taxes on a house can only go up the rate of inflation.
So you support the idea of capping property taxes?
I not only support it, I'm committed to going forward and using anybody that I have contacts with to push that, because that is how you attain savings, is that you no longer are out there just capturing. If I'm going to raise taxes, or if the school board's going to raise taxes, or if a city's going to raise taxes, they should have the guts to vote for it.
Put it on a ballot. Yeah.
Not just put it on a ballot. They should have the guts, because if you've capped it and you need more money, instead of just absorbing all those horrendous increases that everybody are getting now, if that was capped, if you want more money, you're going to have to cast a vote on Tuesday or Wednesday morning or Monday night or whatever when you meet to get that money. And that's how government should operate. You should have to put yourself out there. If you need more money, and maybe you do, I don't know, maybe your city needs more money, or maybe the school, maybe they actually do, but it shouldn't be that you just are allowed to capture all that growth. My brother's 81 years old. His taxes valuation has increased 35%, not in 10 years, not in five, in 2 years. My mother-in-law is 86 years old. Her property taxes went up 20% last year. She doesn't get anything out of the value of that house.
Now, right, unless she sells it. Yeah,
exactly.
You're right.
Now,
yeah.
And if you sell it, then you should have to pay some of that back. I agree with that. Okay, I don't have a problem with that, because you then actually got a benefit. But as long as you're living in that house, mowing your yard, doing what you're doing, you're not getting any benefit for being, for that living in that house, other than what you had 20 years ago. If same benefit. Doesn't matter that the guy across from you sold his house for a lot of money. You don't get that benefit, and you shouldn't be taxed on that. That's my position.
I completely agree with you. And David Dennis and I have gone around and around on this topic, because he's been able to run around for 8 years and claim he never raised taxes, but my taxes have gone up. My home's now worth suddenly $100,000 more, and all we've done is mow the lawn, and very frustrating. With us still is Greg Ferris, candidate for Sedgwick County Commission District 3. Greg, let's talk about a few basic party platform, platform issues. This is, County Commission is one of the local races that is actually a partisan race. You've got registered Republican, Democrat candidates. This is a Republican primary. Where do you stand on issues like the Second Amendment? What are your stand on gun rights, for example?
Well, I believe that the reason the Second Amendment was put in place was that we could have our guns to protect ourselves against government. It wasn't to go hunting. They didn't put the Second Amendment in to go hunting.
No, yeah, they did that on their own anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So I believe that we should have the right to any weapon, because the government has all weapons.
I didn't have a chance the last week to talk about this issue, because we got talking about so many others. But life is, an interesting issue for a lot of Kansans, especially Wichitans. And I found out something interesting about you earlier this week when you were on the Wichita City Council. I didn't realize this. The city of Wichita used to actually use taxpayer money to fund Planned Parenthood. You actually led the effort to defund Planned Parenthood. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually community development block grant money. It was federal money that came to the city, and we dispersed that money. And we would get our list of who's getting funding, and I looked at it and I said, why are we giving money to Planned Parenthood?
Darn good question.
Oh, that's for women's health issues. I said, I don't think so. So I went around to some of my colleagues and said, hey, this isn't going to happen. Or I'm going to make a big stink about it. We got it out of there, and it was gone. It's never been back.
Yeah, that's one of those. Somebody got it in there, whether it was Elma Broadfoot or someone like that.
Oh, well before that.
Elma. So it's a long time.
Yes, okay. It was back in the before Elma even got around.
Wow. Okay. So interesting. I know we have just a few minutes left here. The third plank in your platform is efficient community services. Can you give us some examples of government efficiencies, area where you would envision where we could cut? I know the county's facing a bit of a budget shortfall.
Yeah, I think we need to look at some consolidation issues. You're not going to consolidate the city and the county. That's not going to happen. We have too many small communities that have their own government, so it's really not possible to do that. They've already consolidated the planning department. They've consolidated the building department. They've started some things in the fire department. I believe those things certainly are areas where we can save money. Interestingly enough, Sedgwick County only has one park, but they have a park department. City of Wichita has, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 parks. That's major parks. They actually have more than that. But so it may be this is a good opportunity to get rid of some bloat that we don't need to do by consolidating the park services. So I think those are some areas. I don't know. I need to get into the budget a little bit more. I'm going to be honest. Running a campaign, I haven't actually studied the budget. One of the beauties is that I voted on 12 budgets. I understand the budget. I can look at a budget. We made a lot of cuts. We were able to be very lean. And that's what you'll have for me as somebody who has a business degree, who has looked at 12 different budgets from the city standpoint. County's very similar, so you'll have that advantage.
Well, Greg, thank you again for joining us this evening. If folks want more information on your campaign or if they want to volunteer or donate, they can visit Greg Ferris for countycommission.com, correct?
That is correct.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. I know there's a third candidate in the race. I mean, we've reached out. I haven't heard back yet, but primary's coming up in August, and I'm sure you're out working. We had your opponent on the show last week, so I wish you the best of luck, my friend, and just, you know, keep at it, brother.
John, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.